Hello, and welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about Days of Future Past. We, of course, know my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
This could end badly.
And also with us is co-host from another podcast, Davey Sister Neil.
I guess I'm on this show. I'll be here for the first half. I didn't see the movie.
Okay. Also with us is one of our favorite guests, Kitty Hawk.
Are you Raven or are you Mystique?
Okay, that's still Raven. Anyways, also with us is Thomas Revor.
I have this feeling of deja vu. Not to mention, I have this feeling of deja vu.
And also, did you already say that?
And also with us,
it could be. I do have this feeling of deja vu.
And also with us is Red Ink.
This one's for you, Morph.
Okay. Morph sucked. Balls. But anyways,
but it was still one of the most epic scenes in that cartoon.
Yeah, they blew their load in the first 5 minutes. Anyways, let's get started here. As always, we're going to go. We're going to go through the solicitations and talk to you about what happened this week in comics and see.
Oh god.
So we have Archie Jughead and Archie Double Digest number 3.
Judge Dredd and Archie, sign me up.
I said Jughead.
Hey, they did have Archie and the Punisher. Judge Dredd just around the corner.
I teach kids about street justice. That'd be great.
You shouldn't be wearing a hat that stupid. Boom.
Yep.
Maybe that's how Archie dies. Got judged and was sentenced to death.
Yeah, that's how Archie does. Yeah.
So we have 3 variant covers for Mega Man. Okay, it's not much else to mention about with Archie right now. Let's go to Avatar Press. Skipping Avatar Press.
God is dead.
And Garth Ennis just swore a blood oath on you, Ben.
Well, he knows how I feel about him anyway, so there. So, let's see here. We got, Legend of Oz, The Wicked West, number 18. Has anyone been looking at this series?
Has anyone seen the movie this is supposed to be, that sounds like it's based off of?
Wait.
No, I don't think anybody has. That's why.
No.
I don't think
it didn't last a week. What?
I saw the trailer and I was like, right.
I saw the trailer and I thought, yeah, Oz has gone into public domain, hasn't it?
Well, when Dorothy's voiced by the chick from Glee and the villain's voiced by Martin Short, you know, they didn't exactly stretch the budget.
Well, there are certain things that always say it's going to be a terrible movie. One of them is if Eddie Murphy has multiple roles. The other is Martin Short in it?
Are you getting a problem where, like, any of these, like, links aren't loading or anything?
They're sometimes.
Just... I think that's God's way of saying you don't want to see him anyway.
I just wanted to see the horror.
So we have the Joan of Arc prologue, so we learned what Joan was doing before stuff.
And how did she do that with that pole?
So apparently this is a series where Joan of Arc shows up in modern times, is looking for artifacts and stuff.
Oh, God.
And she just left Las Vegas, according to this synopsis.
Because, why not?
She's also a very sexy blonde, apparently.
I know, really.
Damn it.
She's got anime mecha wings.
Yeah, well, she's, like, you know, sent by God.
Maybe she came to the future the same way Red Sonja did.
Yeah.
Find out if there are any Marvel female characters that are missing.
It still makes about as much sense as Conan getting trapped in the present, dressing like a pimp and having a pet leopard.
That makes more sense.
Though, Neil loves the Red Sonja thing, though, the most.
It is pretty funny.
Is that because of the possession angle, or just the fact you like looking at redheads in chainmail?
Yes.
Yes.
¿Por qué lo no dos?
You combine Red Sonja with Mary Jane Watson, and you got victory.
So apparently they're the same person, but whatever. But anyways, moving on, we got some Boom comics here with stuff. I remember JT was reading one of these titles.
I was reading The Bravest Warriors for a while, and it got to the point I enjoy the comic, but I'm willing to wait for the trade so I can go buffet style on that.
I see they've got Clive Barker's Nightbreed, which was a failed comic book based off of a failed movie. So they're having a sequel which will, I wonder how that will do.
Maybe this time it'll work.
Yeah. The definition of insanity.
Yeah. Hey, a cover by Charles M. Schulz for a book.
I was looking at, hey, Broadsword Comics put out Terror Witch of the Black Rose 86. Oh, do let us and read this one.
So we got, well, you know, funny thing is, here's a comic with a name that describes how I feel about the comic industry right now. Dry Spell number one. By Danger Zone. I asked JT once, what do you call it what do you call the road you're driving on when you're going to their headquarters? And JT did not get the joke. I had to tell
him. Highway to the Danger Zone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great movie where the two leads were both gay.
I think the applause sign just fell to the floor. No.
Okay.
I thought that movie was gay.
It was super duper gay.
I mean,
yeah, that's the point.
Especially the volleyball scene.
Yeah, the volleyball.
I mean, that is definitely for all the men.
What about the scene where Val Kilmer does like that teeth chop thing?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
And
playing
and
with the boys.
Yeah.
Come on, Iceman. Anyways, we got some Dark Horse here. We got some Captain Midnight, some Conan the Avenger.
Yep.
But not with the Avengers.
Eerie Archives. I mean, those are the old EC comics.
Oh, yes.
So, volume 16. So, there were a lot of them there.
Elf Quest,
the final quest until the next one. I'm sorry, I love Richard and Wendy Pini, but not literally. I thought Elf Quest ended a long time ago, or at least it should have.
I thought it did, too.
It keeps going.
Yeah.
They got Resident Alien.
Like Al Bagoda, you know, you have to check.
Yeah.
You have to check occasionally to see if he's dead. Oh, sorry, I need to check. Abe Bagoda.
No, I think he's still alive because he was in that Snickers commercial with Betty White when they did that whole you're not yourself when you're hungry. Although,
believe me, Abe Bagoda is still around. I think he's trying to compete with George Burns.
He's still alive. The website says so.
And they got Resident Alien Volume 2, which I highly recommend everyone reads.
So we got another Mass Effect comic series based off a universe that's dead and buried and destroyed by its rights holder.
Oh! You have to keep making it.
Yep.
Well, they bought the license way before, you know, that happened, so...
Where the space baby gives you a choice to destroy the universe worser.
I'd much rather they just set Jupiter on fire and start a second sun.
There we go.
Serenity. Always, mostly good.
Serenity?
Shiny.
Yeah.
Serenity now?
I'm a leaf on the wind. Watch me.
So here we have the Star Wars number 8 of 8, where you can finally see the end of the saga of Star Killer.
Oh, boy.
Lucas's true and original vision.
Before his ex-wife got her hands on, said, "George, honey, just sit over there and look pretty."
What are you doing with this story? Oh, I'm completely covering it in Flash Gordon. It'll be great.
I love Flash Gordon, but
depends upon which one: Buster Crabbe or Sam J. Jones. Yes, sci-fi series. Dump it down the drain.
See, the thing is, Kitty Hawk once, like, a couple months ago, uncovered the secret to Star Wars and Indiana Jones and why it was good. And the answer is, it's George Lucas's ex-wife.
Yep, it certainly is.
Because the thing is, she was a film editor that wasn't just, oh, by the way, she just edited films and she's married to George Lucas. No, she was a film editor that Francis Ford Coppola wanted to work with. She was good in the industry.
And she was... She's really responsible for a lot of the early like stuff, and also for pushing him to do American Graffiti, because she said, "You don't know how to make characters human," and he said, "Fuck you, I'll show you," and he did. And then he sort of fell off after that. So he needed her.
He didn't fall out until a movie involving a certain waterfall.
That movie hits close to the heart, but anyways.
Yep, and another Tomb Raider. That series just seems to keep bouncing back.
Oh, but I thought cut back on the bouncing.
They did. I mean, the last game was really epic with that stop getting raped mini game.
Yeah.
What?
Yep.
Yes. I'm not lying. This is actually in the Tomb Raider, the latest Tomb Raider game, was this mini game where you have to stop getting raped.
Wasn't the guy like grabbing you or something like that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Quick time events to keep him from raping Lara Croft.
What the fuck?
Exactly. I am not lying.
America.
No, it's America.
I haven't played a Tomb Raider since like PS2, man.
So. Yeah, really, honestly, I haven't played Tomb Raider since like Tomb Raider 2. The novelty sort of ran off after that because it was like, oh boy, it's a platformer. I finally figured it out.
And then you play Mario 64. It's like, oh, this is what a platformer is supposed to be.
Well, yeah,
and you never touched Tomb Raider again.
And this is why Miyamoto was made a manager for the longest time.
So, like I said, is everyone else here?
Oh God, I just had a picture of Mario with tits. Ugh.
What?
Oh, give me a second.
Yeah. Well,
that would be called the Great Gianni Sisters, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh yes.
So let's move on to DC Comics, and then let's move on.
Do we have to?
Let's move on to Death Ray Comics.
Now, wait a second. Let's go back to Batman to DC Comics, because there is one thing on there I do see that should be mentioned.
Okay.
And it's actually the last thing they list there, and that is Tales of the Batman, the Carmine Infantino's run on in the series.
Ah, okay. Good stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, this was, I'm looking at it, this is the stuff from 1964, just before the TV series came out.
That's a beautiful cover. So wait a minute. One thing about DC Comics, are they like, I heard they're rebooting like the new 52 again or something?
Six cancellations away from canceling 52 different books.
They are, what happened is they have this thing called Future's End, which is basically their future past.
Oh God, fucking bullshit, damn it.
So hey, moving on,
it was about time for them really to go through and do something like this.
I mean,
DC, what is wrong with you?
So moving on.
Video.
Sorry. I just saw the new JLA. So the new cartoon, and I'm still in a bad mood after that. So
new cartoon for JLA. This is something I haven't heard about.
Well, is that Justice
League? It's the new one that came out. It's kind of kitty looking.
Oh God!
Oh, so
I will give it props because it does have the correct Legion of Doom headquarters.
The one in the swamp.
So yes.
Yes.
So
it does have that. So I'll give it points for that. But everything else is pretty fucking terrible.
Paul Dini, Bruce Timm, why hast thou forsaken us?
Because DC hates them.
Yeah, they did the cardinal sin of DC. They created something phenomenal.
Yes. You're never supposed to poke your head. Tall poppies must be cut down.
See, the thing is, I think Bruce Timm and Paul Dini are waiting for that phone call from Disney saying, hey, you know, we want to apologize for the last 20 years of animation. We really need your help. We will give you no bars access. You can do whatever you want.
Disney got smart and hired Craig McCracken and Lauren Faust, so.
That's true, but the...
Give them props.
Let's talk about one other DC book I feel like needs to be mentioned is
Red Lanterns. Life Lethal number 11. Yeah.
Red Lanterns. And I need to talk about Red Lanterns a little bit because I think the whole other lantern colors things is bullshit, stupid, fucking moronic, Jeff Johns should die shit.
Wow.
Because for like, what, 50 fucking years we had Green Lanterns and one yellow ring that was owned by this one purple-headed guy.
Well, and the Star Sapphire.
And that was fine. That was perfect. That's all we needed. And then Jeff Johns poured a fucking bowl of Lucky Charms and went, have an idea. Bullshit.
You know what? No,
fuck
he went.
Jeff Johns.
He went, feels! We must put feels and everything will happen based on emotions.
This is the stupidity of it. So Guy Gardner is now a Red Lantern. And you're like, oh, ah! Yeah, that's fair, whatever. And
well, he's been like, a Green Lantern 3 times. He's been a Yellow Lantern. He's been a super-powered alien creature. And now he's a Red Lantern. Don't worry, he'll go back to being green soon enough.
Well, he's also been a woman.
Yes.
All it'll take is one punch.
Guy Gardner is a Red Lantern, and he's explaining that he's doing this to prove his self-control. He actually visited Ice, his ex-girlfriend, and said, I'm doing this to prove I'm in self-control. I'm like an alcoholic that is swimming in a lake of beer, and I'm not drinking, and that's proof that I am in control, because he is an angry guy, and he's wearing the rage ring, and he's not succumbing to the rage or something. And it's like, what? Who wrote this shit? And the worst part is Supergirl is now a Red Lantern and has forsaken the Supergirl title to be a Red Lantern now.
Oh, so the Supergirl title failed as well?
Yes. So if you look at this cover here, you'll actually see her here being strangled by this thing that has no torso.
That's Supergirl.
Yes.
The one on the left.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was the one in the middle.
No, wait.
Supergirl on the right. The blonde being strangled.
Yeah.
I was being
the one where it looks like a demented version of her new costume.
What?
The one where looks like a demented version of her new costume.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why is she wearing a mask?
So nobody knows who she is.
So no one figures out it's Supergirl.
She's female. She couldn't get a goatee. Well, I don't know.
Well, maybe she could. Herself.
That's
she
funny because like, that's what Guy Gardner's walking around with now.
Yeah. Oh. He doesn't have the awesome mushroom haircut anymore.
This is why I don't read it anymore.
Yeah.
So moving on, we got some Dynamite.
You
missed the Drawn Quarterly stuff. I mean, that deserves no mention.
Okay.
Which Deja of Mars cover do I need to buy to get that exposes the most skin?
I actually like this one right here.
Risque cover. Can't see the risque cover.
I like the regular cover he did. But let's see here. We got some Doc Savage, Dr. Spectre, Master of the Occult.
I never
read this title, but it sounds like already a Doctor Strange ripoff.
Well, it was the first Doctor Strange ripoff back in the 60s.
Yeah. Rob Liefeld cover. There you go. Quality.
What?
Two of them.
Yeah. There's a black and white, and so you can color it.
Is he still doing the thing where the right eye is just a little bit higher than the left?
Yes.
Yeah. He hasn't learned how to use a computer. He should just learn how to use a computer and fix his art, you know?
God damn it. It's like,
his art is perfect already. I mean, have you never seen such mastery of the anatomy before?
He still does the thing with the eye.
Here's his philosophy. Pile it on. I gotta defend
Rob Liefeld a little bit here, but not for the reason.
Oh, wait, before you defend him, I have to say this. I like pouches.
Okay, let me explain to you what my defense is.
Empty pouches.
He sucks at art. He sucks at public relations. He sucks at being able to speak for himself. But at the same time, think about this. Whenever he is announced to be a guest artist on a book, the book sales jump up 200%.
That says more about the stupidity of humanity than...
That's the thing, is it's like... If you were brought in as a guest artist and people all of a sudden want to buy your book in droves.
No, well, let me go ahead and, all joking aside about this, it's not comic book readers who buy this stuff. And it's like it was back in the 90s and 2000. It's speculators, people who do not know the business, who see Rob Liefeld's name on there, and they buy it expecting the price to go through the roof, and then bitch and moan about how bad the comic industry when it doesn't.
That's true. But like I said, you know, just to defend Liefeld slightly, if you're brought in to do a book, just, you know, one guest book, guest art issue, and that book jumps up 200%, wouldn't you have a little bit of an ego too?
I might actually go for the Bob Layton one. I mean, if that's the former baby-faced Bob Layton from Marvel, then yeah, I'd be more interested in that one. But come on, Rob Liefeld I'm sorry, I can't draw a straight line without a ruler, and I draw better than Layfield.
Rob Layfield is like the fucking Windows logo on your product. It's like, dumb people say, ooh, it says Windows. It must be good. And
Oh, that's a perfect analogy. Rob Liefeld, the Windows of comics.
Yep.
So, moving on here, we got some Windows IDW. 8. We got some IDW here as well, some Ghostbusters.
Yeah, well, you skipped over 24. Whoa. And with the movie coming out.
Oh, movie God.
24 coming out?
Yeah.
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 24, Die Another Day or something like that.
That's a James Bond title.
It's something like that. I don't know. I didn't watch 24 in the day. I'm not going to watch it now, but I thought that the concept was interesting.
I only know the memes that come out of it.
The Ghostbusters series has been pretty good.
Yeah, and this one I was seeing, because I actually had to click on the link here, and here's what it says. Stop us if you've heard this one before. A Sumerian god has invaded the city that never sleeps, causing all manner of chaos. People are possessed. Blood rains from the skies. Dogs and cats, you get the picture. In other words, it's a Monday.
Yes. Well, Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, there, what is Tuesday. It? I haven't picked this one up yet, but the mass hysteria is basically the 30th anniversary story of Ghostbusters, and they're going up against the goddess Tiamat.
Oh yeah. I'm going to have to pick that up.
And I think in this latest storyline, they brought back Rey's guardian angel ghost, who looks suspiciously like Jake Blues.
Oh, cool.
Because in the original... because in the original like four-issue story like the series started with, there was like this minion of Gozer came and was trying to get Rey to like reselect the traveler's form, and he gets help from this ghost in his dreams that basically it's John Belushi. And when the guy's like, you know, a massive and moving Torg, and he's like, no, picked one, and he turns around and the demon literally goes, no, and it's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man again.
Nice. Okay, I have to read this. This sounds good.
Yep.
Because this spins off of, it goes like Ghostbusters 1, Ghostbusters 2, Ghostbusters the video game, and then the comic book series.
I can deal with that.
So, let's see here. We got a couple of comics based off the Abrams Star Trek verse, which we're not going to read.
Why would we?
We got X-Files Season 10.
Well, they've got the Transformers, Robots in Disguise, and I've heard it from a friend of mine who's a huge Transformers fan, that these two series have been phenomenal, including some massive plot twists, like the newest captain of the Autobot ship is the newest Autobot, Megatron.
Yep.
And I mean, it's just, that boom you heard was my head popping. they're doing things you would have never thought, and it's working.
Well, they've had this plan since day one, because, I mean, they started with the series of miniseries, then they had the couple of ongoings, and at the end of the last Transformers ongoing, Optimus Prime gave up his name and went back to just call me, you know...
Omega Pax.
Orion Pax,
Omega Pax.
And then they split the titles into Robots in Disguise, which follows the what goes on Cybertron and how life is there, and then you have Hot Rod... going off in the ship The Lost Light trying to find the Knights of Cybertron, which are like, you know, it's the Table Round.
Yeah, and then they Robots in Disguise. I mean, the ruler of Cybertron. Who would have ever thought that the person that the Cybertronians would have chosen to be in charge of Cybertron would be Starscream?
Well, it just proves it doesn't matter whether you're organic or a computer, everyone's an idiot.
Yeah. But I mean, the whole thing has worked.
I mean, and the thing is, he goes through the each artist kind of explains that if there's a different form to a Transformer, they've basically gone in and gotten an upgrade. And during towards the end of the last big crossover, like just prior to Dark Cybertron, Starscream went into the shop and he came out in his Transformers Armada form. And Bumblebee's gone, he's become, originally he was a bug, he got more armor added on, he transforms into like a Camaro or Charger.
Oh, the newer
yeah,
one.
Yeah, and then recently he got rebuilt in the comic, and now he's Goldbug.
Oh,
again.
He's got like the
Goldbug.
Yeah, he's got the cheese grater face and everything.
Nice.
I'm a Goldbug.
And the quintessence trait of the Transformers.
And of course, Samurai Jack. We can't leave without mentioning Samurai Jack, or everybody's favorite cartoon, My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic.
More.
Yep.
All right, what we got next?
We got some Image Comics here.
No, we don't. Nope.
I don't see anything in the Image this week. So
Skull Kickers.
Oh, yeah. However, after that, there's actually something that we were talking about something kind of this. IT Books, Console Wars, Sega, Nintendo, and the Battle that Defined a Generation.
I wonder if I can get
Sega
this.
Sega does.
Yes.
With Nintendo.
Yeah, I might get this digitally.
Sega!
Oh, Sega, you failed so hard. And Nintendo's going to follow you soon.
So
I don't know. I actually think that it's going to be Microsoft that's going to be following them.
No, see, Microsoft, they have to still keep burning through the Office and Windows money, which they still haven't gotten completely through yet. Now, I give them about, like, I don't know, like 5 more years before their HP.
Third breath with the new CEO since they got rid of Monkey Boy.
Yeah, but I heard something about the CEO is like a plant or something. Where was he from? He's from another corporation or something like that. It's been what's going on lately with a lot of corporations. You sneak in one of your guys into another corporation, then they start buying the old corporation's products and things like that. See Nokia.
Well, who knows? Maybe this guy started off by selling sugar water.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's Microsoft. I mean,
Console Wars is the underdog tale of how Kalinske miraculously turned an industry punchline into a market leader. That is true. Kalinske is like the guy, and they just made him walk the plank when they started going towards Saturn.
Yeah.
Because Sega of Japan just didn't know what the hell they were
doing. Well, it was because, like, Sega of America was more powerful up until, like, about 1994. And that was, like, 10 years after the sale. Like, the American division was owned by Gulf and Western. And then they sold it off to Sega Japan. And then that's when the problems began. Because the success really came from the American division.
That console
was nothing in Japan.
Yeah, I know. And so it's really sad that, like, the Japanese side was just so bitter and angry about, like, they couldn't make decisions. And then they were like, we're going to make all the decisions. And then we get Sega Saturn, we get, unfortunately, the Dreamcast with no DVD player and other bullshit things. Anyway, sad tale for another day.
This isn't a video games podcast, so we won't elaborate anymore.
Yeah, you should have me on a video games podcast.
We will.
Yeah, we should do another one. I love it.
Absolutely.
So we have Marvel Comics here.
Back up. We missed one.
Yeah, we got Kodansha, dude.
Yep. I've had people telling me how great Attack on Titan is.
It is very good. I have not read the manga yet because I've been holding off, but I think I'm going to get this big trade paperback because the idea of, like, the first 5 volumes for, like, less than 60 if I buy it from Amazon. Yeah, okay. I'll do that. Yeah. Everything else on that list for Kodansha, I've read it, and I don't read them anymore.
What's My Little Monster?
Oh, it was that blue stuffed animal back from the late 80s.
That's my pet monster.
With the horn. Oh, well.
What?
He's talking about My Pet Monster, which was a different thing altogether.
That thing. I remember that thing.
I can't believe I remember that.
So
I'm surprised that you remember that. I'm afraid about remembering that. Of course.
Marvel.
Nope. Well, hey, there's one for you, Ben. Dan Slott signed Amazing Spider-Man number 1. No. Woo.
Made it worth
less. Unless it has signed his... signed his resignation and apology.
Slot.
But what I do see here is Devil Dinosaur.
Yeah, the original Kirby stuff? Yeah. Yes.
Devil Dinosaur. A couple other things here I see that I kind of am okay with. Let's see here. We got Thunderbolts.
Hold on. I got to look something up to see if my memory is going bad. But
Winter Soldier, the better march. Girls are so in love with Winter Soldier.
Talk amongst yourselves.
No, that Seekers of the Weird completed this week, which is actually a really good mini. So, you ever see that, Kitty Hawk?
Which one?
Disney Kingdom Seekers of the Weird. It's basically a miniseries based on a concept for a ride at the Magic Kingdom that they never completed, but they took the idea of this Museum of the Weird, and which was going to just be like a typical, you know, roller coaster bumper car ride, and they turn into these kids, find out that their family is like part of this, you know, mysterious society that keeps like the weird and the creepy from affecting the real world.
Yeah, I'd heard about that.
Really,
that was actually, I was looking up this one because I saw that the people doing it were Brendan Seifert, Carl Moline, a name that I remember, and Brian Crosby. And I thought, with Keenspot, boy, this will suck. But fortunately, he doesn't have anything to do with Keenspot.
Good. Yeah, but it's basically like the art is just trippy enough that it works. I mean, they've got. It's basically, you go through the door and it's bigger on the inside than the outside in the back room of this curio shop. And they got all sorts of weird stuff in there. There's like, part of the story is they have to bring together these pieces of furniture that will summon this mystic clock that the big bad wants. And in their course of the travels, the two main kids, they come across stuff like these fungus people who are basically indentured servants of the organization that runs the museum. And they just basically crawl over things and just eat all the dust and the dirt and whatnot.
Interesting.
And they got stuff like a candle man that it's like this wax sculpture of a man that's, it's basically like the requisite ticking clock for the heroes to get this stuff together so the evil sorceress doesn't kill their parents and all that. Just, you know what you said before, feels all over this book.
It's not stupid. Well, it doesn't sound like stupid feels.
I do see something further on down the line that immediately struck my interest, but more because of who is doing it, not the title itself. Mm. And that's Inhuman Number 2.
Mm. Ah, I see. Yes.
Frank Cho cover. Yes.
Where?
Where? Yeah.
I mean, Adam and Frank Cho.
But it looks like Brandy with extensions.
Brandy,
you're
a fine girl?
No, not Cho know what he's talking about. Yeah.
So
go away, Ben. But they also have Dexter Down Under. You didn't mention that. I saw that and I thought they did a deal with Cartoon Network and they've actually got a good cartoon comic series based off of a cartoon.
No.
Wrong Dexter.
No. They did those for a while, though.
Yeah, and they stunk there, too. So.
Yeah. Well.
But what interested me, you know, was basically Thunderbolts number 26. But you know, moving on, you know, we have let's see here.
No, you got to say. I mean, things that stick out to me. Big must buy from Marvel, believe it or not, because now that the lawsuits are over,
Miracle Man
Volume 1.
Nice.
With an Alan Davis cover. I mean, that's just one of those things.
So they finally fixed all that.
Yep, and Todd McFarlane lost big.
So are they finally getting
by now?
Yep.
Are they finally changing Carol Danvers' costume?
They did
twice.
Yeah, and they've got a new Ms. Marvel in there.
But she kind of had the Miracle Man costume there for a while.
Yeah, she kind of did, but now her costume's worse. She has, like, this headgear shit that, when Neil saw it, he was very, very saddened.
I could see what they're doing, but does it have to be Carol Danvers? Come on.
Well, I mean, look at everything that's happened with Carol. I mean, just one more bad strike against her.
You know, she did give birth to her stalker rapist boyfriend, so...
And then had all of her powers stolen and was genetically modified. And, well, but that's enough.
Okay, so let's see here. I see something that JT would like from Paper Cuts.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Ben.
JT, I know you too well. I know you wept in glee once you saw this.
Leapt in glee is such a strong phrase, Ben.
Does Yellow Ranger still have a wing?
There are some actual breasts on the cover here, so.
All I can say is just go. Go, Power Rangers. Go. Go.
Go far away.
So let's skip down here. So it's we got some Harvey horrors in the PSR books.
Yeah, and Roy Thomas Presents.
Excellent.
They're still putting out Fangoria?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea.
We got some Doc Savage double novel volumes right here.
Yep.
It's a James Baina cover.
Valiant is still printing. Good for them.
Yep.
And unfortunately, so is Zenoscope Entertainment.
I'm sorry, oh, God. I swear to God, there was more Zenoscope comics at the store this week than I've ever seen before.
Who buys these?
JT.
I do not.
Stop it, JT. Stop it right now.
Well, they forced you to buy them after what you did with them on the store.
I mean, GameStop, that's wrong. Where they try to like sell you a magazine you don't want?
Yeah,
it's like Game Informer.
Yeah. You can save 10% off. Use games and use consoles.
Hey, Game Informer happens to be pure crap.
It is.
I used to work for them, and they gave it to me for free.
Dude, I used to work for them too, and I used to have to push those fucking things on people. The only reason I did, I just tell people, look, buy this, and you'll like save some money. You'll get a crappy magazine too.
These are some nice covers, though. I'll tell you that.
But they're usually
Game
like
or Zenoscope.
Both.
It's one of the Grim Fairy Tales.
Yeah, that you know what's inside.
The artist for some of these is some guy on DeviantArt named Squirrel Shaver.
Nice.
Squirrel Shaver?
That just made me hate these even more.
Yeah, go on to DeviantArt and search for Squirrel Shaver.
As we all sit here and hit our computers and start talking.
Squirrel Shaver.
I don't even know if I want to.
No, I'm not. I'm not going to do it. No. Not going to do it.
Yeah. Wouldn't be prudent.
Mike, yeah. And this holy juncture. Fuck, I can't pronounce it.
Thank you, Google. So, Mike DeBalfo.
Yeah. So, like I said, there you see. That's what he does.
I was looking at one of these and I thought it said cover A, Johnny Dangerously.
Not bad art.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not bad. It's just that
he has a strength that he plays to it.
Looks familiar, though.
Yeah, but you have to wonder
what Dorian Green thinks about it. Oh, come on. Nobody gets that reference? And you call yourself comic book fans.
Yeah, I got My Pet Monster. Yeah, I only get one per show.
Anyways, I went back and I was looking at
the solicitations, and we're going to take a brief break, and when we get back, we will talk about the topic of the show.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the Internet's number one and longest-running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Adkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the Geekcast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Come on, man. No.
What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's action. It's drama. It's comedy. It's Decian, the superhero webcomic. Decian's got superhero antics and sexy girls. Read it now at Decian.com. DASIEN.com.
And now, back to the show.
Warning. The following recording contains many plot spoilers. If you have not seen the movie being discussed,
please go see the movie before listening. If not, you have been warned. And now, on with the show.
And we're back with the topic of the show. That is the Days of Future Past, comic book movie, et cetera, et cetera. So let's start with the comic book. You know, Chris Claremont, 80s X-Men.
Best this, title ever.
This storyline is only two issues long. Collective of 46 pages. That's it. That the thing is, this is back during the time when someone could, like Claremont, could do a story that is nuanced enough and deep enough in less time it takes some of these newer writers to just introduce all the players.
Yep.
Maybe.
And
well,
the thing is, this is like the first major Kitty Pryde storyline, because the previous issues, the thing is, you can buy the digital trade Days of Future Past, which has the three previous issues with Kitty Pryde being first brought into the mansion, and I think it actually has the Kitty Pryde fairy tale in there too.
Does it have another great story? But
does it have the scene where she's screaming, "Professor Xavier's a jerk"?
I don't think they got to that point in the comics at the time.
I think,
but it was around then.
I think this is before Xavier really went beyond the moral event horizon yet, because that was late 90s when Xavier
went
over the moral event horizon. But that's a topic of another show. So like I said, it's if you buy the digital trade, you'll have a Kitty Pryde fairy tale story as well. And Days of Future Past starts in the future, starts with a story, the heroes have lost.
Mutant
registration not only happens, it's a thing, it's enforced. Mutants are in the lowest of the slums, having to report to camps, wearing inhibitors. You know, people with potential of the X gene are prohibited from breeding. And then there are humans, which are the highest class. And the thing is,
not only
the Terminators took over.
Yeah, not only are the mutants dead, but anyone with paranormal abilities. I mean, regular superheroes have been killed off.
And Grimm.
I mean, the scene where Kitty Pryde is walking past the cemetery.
Yeah, there's lots of normal hero names on there.
Yeah.
Anyone who could stop the Sentinels were killed as well. And like I said, the thing is,
which is revisited in House of M later, if you've read that one, in that those people pretend to be mutants.
And the thing is, when you look at it, in the fact that Kitty Pryde is a Jewish character, and Claremont, you know, as the creator of this character, you know, he chose the scenes very carefully, because one of the things that really resonates with the story of the X-Men is persecution, and when in the past have we seen persecution of this level before, of camps, of people being segregated, of people being told not to breed, of actually being sterilized.
Right. I mean, Days of Future Past is a very thinly veiled retelling of Nazi Germany.
And it's also sort of a retelling of what happened in the South with the segregation, in that there was sterilization of black women during that period.
Well, the Tecumseh experiment.
Yes.
Yep. And there were court cases that have started up about sterilization that occurred during the 60s.
Absolutely.
So this was on the mind of the people of the time.
Yes.
And Claremont couldn't use the word sterilization, so in the book he actually just says, "We're not allowed to breed," you know?
Yeah.
And really, like I said, the amount of information Claremont was able to cram without feeling like it's an info dump. Because the thing is, what Claremont was a master of, show, not tell. And there's a scene, the way he explains the three classes is he has a scene with the older Kitty, Kate Pryde, in a train. With her back turned, and you can see the M painted on her jacket, and she's wearing a jumpsuit, like an issue jumpsuit. You see, and explains the three classes that way.
Yeah, and that was in one panel, a page width panel, but it was one panel where he got that all in, and it didn't seem like it was forced. It was a dialogue with the reader, not just here it is. Yeah,
that would Bendis write it.
I mean, it, there was so much in there, because this really is two stories, and that is the future story and the present slash past story.
Absolutely.
And dystopian futures have been done, well, since Wells.
Oh, well, even before then, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean... science fiction dystopian futures have been told.
Well, no, actually, there were some from the 19th century. But anyway, yeah.
The thing that we talked about before is, you know, the Terminator type thing. And Terminator is a great, because this is around the same time, you know, 80s, robots rising up, you know, over man. The Sentinels, the same thing, rising up over man. And,
technology.
You know, James Cameron, great forerunner of this, except for the fact that he offhandedly mentioned he was partially inspired when he wrote Terminator by the devil with a glass hand, and then what's his name?
Harlan Ellison.
Ellison.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, Back to Future Past, it really is. I mean, the whole beginning of the story, everything that takes place in the future, to call it depressing is an understatement. I mean, when you've got the badass of the group, Wolverine, taken out in one shot.
Yes.
And just the iconic scene of him being blasted, and then not even showing the full thing, but just the arm of his adamantium bones hanging off panel. And I mean, that does more than anything else can be.
And as the cover says in this issue, everyone dies.
Yep.
And really, the story is you know, the amount of the characters they introduce, they have, Kitty with, or Kate, I should say, with her husband, Peter.
Pyotr?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pyotr Rasputin.
And you're introduced to a strange telepathic redhead named Rachel and her husband, Franklin.
Yeah, and they didn't get overused in later issues, did they? No.
And the mysterious, powerful telepath Rachel has this one-shot, long-shot idea of, you know, let's change this so that this never happened, that we can pinpoint the exact moment when everything went to hell.
Mm-hmm.
It's the assassination of Senator Kelly. So we need to go back and stop the assassination of Senator Kelly by Mystique and her Brotherhood, which was being called at that time.
Yep, the Brotherhood
of Evil Mutants.
Freedom Force.
No, Freedom Force much later. They were still the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants at the time of Days of Future Past.
Aha! Such a reference.
So what happened is they elect, you know, because they elect Kitty to be, or Kate to be, the time traveler.
Well, they didn't really elect her at the time because they were sending her in the past. The reason they used was because the older X-Men have already had training by Xavier in blocking mental attacks, which is what this is. Kitty at the time was the most, this is one, she just started off, she was inexperienced, she didn't really have any of the training, she was the one, quote, most vulnerable, so they could send the older Kate Pryde back in without any trouble, and have her take over her younger body.
Yep.
And the thing is, the thing that's amazing about this is, in the first couple of issues of Kitty being with the X-Men, she's very standoffish with Nightcrawler because she's still weirded by his appearance. But when Kate first inhabits her younger body, the first thing she does is she hugs Nightcrawler like she met a long-lost friend.
Yeah.
Which is actually quite a nice, warm scene. But yeah, she briefs the X-Men on her mission. And the thing is, there's lots of weird reactions. Wolverine takes the cake, though.
Where he's like, says, yeah.
Wolverine says she smells like a woman.
Ooh, that new perfume is working out, Kitty. That nudge.
It's in the book.
Oh. Yeah, I know. I know. I've got the books in front of me.
Okay, I'm just saying. I mean, Claremont. You know. Well, we all know about Claremont. You know, it's like, you know.
Well, you do know Wolverine was originally supposed to be an actual Wolverine that mutated into a human.
Yes. They tried that, it didn't work. They tried to get that same merge in the Spider Woman, it didn't work, so
it would take
I don't know. It did work, I mean, for DC Comics. I mean, they had a slug that mutated into Dandadio.
No.
I think you have to de-evolve a slug into a Dandadio.
Okay, point taken. But, I mean, Days of Future Past really was, it was the hardest, because they've had heroes die before in other comics. I mean, of course, Bucky Barnes being the first. And going through and just showing that there was no hope, none. They were not going to change the future. The only hope that they had was to change the past. And by doing it, by taking the most inexperienced member of the X-Men and hoping she could do something.
Yes.
I mean, this wasn't just a long shot. This was trying to hit the bullseye from 5 miles off without a scope.
Yep.
And that was pretty much, I mean, what Claremont had to do to nail the story. I mean, well, Claremont and John Byrne.
Yes.
You've got to give as much credit to Byrne because a lot of it was collaboration, as was the Marvel style.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, Byrne, which is why I like it better.
Byrne was crucial to this process, even back then. And
Back then, he didn't have his full ego.
Back then, he was controllable.
Also, it was Claremont. But the story really doesn't begin to take off. I mean, because you've got all that heaviness, all that death, within the comic code, of course.
Yes.
Happening, and then Kate gets sent to the past.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And, what happens with, you know, her mission is they do foil the Brotherhood from assassinating Senator Kelly. But the thing is, Kate, while trying to stop Destiny, I believe, phasing through her,
yep,
you know, knocked the future Kate back into the future. So
Destiny, whose mutant power was to see the future. She's blind and a longtime friend of Mystique's. But
I heard more than friends.
All depends upon which writer you're talking about. That wasn't until the 90s. And the 90s, you know, basically, you can ignore.
Well, the original pitch for Nightcrawler was he was supposed to be Destiny's kid with Mystique as the father.
Huh, that one I never heard.
I heard that one.
Or Rogue, one of the two.
No, I heard that one because that was before they even created Azazel.
Zazel.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. But I mean, look, I want to take about some of the minor things too, because at the time, Scott Summers wasn't with the X-Men.
That's right.
Storm was the leader.
Fuck Scott Summers. I have a thing about him.
he had cool shades. But I mean, yeah, there was one scene in there where, of course, Wolverine is going to go in, and it wasn't his yellow and blue costume; it was his brown and brown costume. He had his brown pants on, where Aurora Storm basically confronts him about the use of his claws. Yeah, I mean, where the line that she gives is for him to sheathe them or use them on me. And Wolverine's response is, that can be arranged. But she...
Be arranged, bub.
Yeah, through force of will, I mean, and intelligence, basically tells him he's not going to do it. Here's why he's not going to do it. So, I mean, it's a battle where he is not going to use his claws against somebody else.
Hmm.
Absolutely. One of the fine moments of 80s Storm, because the thing is, if you look for one of the strong feminine archetypes that Claremont was known for in the 80s, you know, Storm is right up there.
Mm-hmm.
Before he created that mohawk?
That mohawk, yes, is okay.
Well, the whole storyline behind the mohawk was idiotic, but...
Well, yeah, but I'm okay with the mohawk.
But, I mean, to some of the things, because, I mean, we'll talk about the movie in a little bit, yes, but we had in the movie Trask, who was going to be the subject of the execution, not being shot at, whereas in the book, Destiny, who is going to do the killing, does fire, but thanks to Kitty Pryde's interference, or Kate Pryde and Kitty Pryde's body interference, misses.
Yeah.
Yes. But let's talk about the movie now. This movie is, you know, Days of Future Past, or as we like to call it, the apology.
No. Yes. First Class was the apology.
Yeah. No, I say this is the apology because it's like, look, those two movies, they don't exist.
Yeah.
Well, First Class is the apology that everyone saw.
Yeah.
But, well, for,
I would say Days of Future Past is for people in the know.
First Class is the apology. Days of Future Past is the middle finger.
See, I use the term the apology because I knew a friend once that said, "Oh, Highlander 3, the apology."
Oh.
There was no Highlander 3. There wasn't even a part 2. What madness do you speak of?
Highlander 2, there should only be one.
I'm going to say this. As much as an apology it is, I'm going to go ahead and say that, like, it's still a little weird because it's, like, still a little bit of let's help the Nazis, which was my problem with number 3. But, it was a lot better. I have to say, erasing those two movies was a good thing. But
But
there seems to be an undercurrent of the X-Men then help, like, the Nazis. And I'm sort of wondering, like, why that keeps happening.
But let's talk about the plot of the movie, because the movie starts not just like the comic book, but with a similar tone of it's the future, we're fucked, we lost. You know, we see the concentration camps, we see the mutants branded with an M, much like the Jews branded with the Star of David. I'm serious. And we see the mutants that are left free are not, like, truly X-Men anymore. They're just refugees. They're just trying to survive and live.
Right, where they have some of the fan favorites. I mean, they had Bishop in there, who, my God, why is he a fan favorite, except for the fact that it was the 90s. Blink.
This time.
Well, yeah, he worked this time. I think Blink was my favorite character out of the movie, in the future movie, because of the... Well, as a friend told me, you could tell somebody's been playing Portal again.
Yeah, I know. I did say that during the movie. Now we're playing with portals. And, of course, I got dirty looks.
Where we had Warbird, who, Warpath. In the comics... Warpath, sorry. Warbird was another name for Carol Danvers. Where Warpath, who, in the comics, was the brother of the first X-Men killed, Thunderbird. Let's see, who else was there? Of course, you had Bobby Drake, Iceman, who kicked ass.
I know!
And it didn't take three movies for him to ice up.
Yes. And Colossus, of course, you gotta have, if you got Kate Pryde, you gotta have Colossus.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the thing is, the whole starting action sequence where you see the new Nimrod Sentinels, and that's what I think they are, the Nimrod Sentinels. And let me just say that they are, when I first saw this movie and I saw them coming in, crawling in through a hole, they drilled themselves with their own reforming body. I was like, oh shit. And then seeing them actually adapt and shift their form to adapt to each mutant's power, I just say they aren't really, some of them are X-Men, some of them aren't. And
yeah.
It was like, you get this sense that you really can't beat these things one-on-one.
Yeah, they did a really good job of that.
You just did a good job.
And even if you could fight off one, it was a matter of attrition, because they would keep coming at you and coming at you and coming at you until, because they didn't give a damn if they were destroyed. They were robots. All they cared about was killing you. And it didn't matter if it took one or 1,000. They were going to get you.
Yeah.
It was very vicious. I mean, during that scene, that initial scene, I was actually like kind of tense, because I was like, oh my God, they're getting slaughtered. It was really good.
And the way that they did it, because it was a great introduction to what was going to be the main part of the plot, where they're getting wiped out. I mean, the small task force there is getting wiped out until Kate Pryde sends Bishop back a week in time so that he can tell them this is what's going to happen, so that the battle never takes place because they were never there.
Okay, I got to stop you right there. So that was Kitty Pryde, because the entire time I was like saying this to my friends and Trevor, I was like, that was Kitty Pryde doing the mind magic shit. And they were like, no, that was a different character. I'm like,
that was indeed Kitty Pryde.
That's Kitty Pryde.
They say that as Bryan Singer explained it as a secondary mutation of her phasing ability is the ability to phase someone through time.
So, like, when she gets older or something like that. Yeah, I kept saying that, but they kept saying, no, you're insane. No, that's a different character. I think it's because of the books they thought it was a different character. I'm like, no, that's Kitty Pryde.
That's really what it is, because if you remember, she does phase through walls when she's running with Bishop.
I pointed that out.
Yeah, go ahead.
On a similar note, it's off topic a little bit. I had a similar argument with one of the opening scenes of somebody. Mm. It's the child that's sifting through the garbage in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yep.
A lot of people were basically trying to tell me who that was. I recognized it right away as soon as I saw him. It was Cable. Everybody said it was Rogue, though.
No, that was Cable.
Yeah, Rogue, I can't say whether it was Cable or not, but I mean, I will definitely say that Rogue would have been too old. I mean, she was
older than Kitty. That's a different issue that's in this movie. Ages are kind of all over the fucking place.
I'm okay with that, though, because the thing is, the brilliant thing about this is anyone who wanted to do Days of Future Past prior would have said, okay, we'll have someone like way down in the future come to present time and stop something, but they're like, no. We're gonna make this a period piece. They're coming back to Nixon era to stop something.
I do like that they've done period pieces with these movies, but it has sort of fucked up the timeline as far
as
like
with that. It's actually is part of the deal.
Okay, anytime travel stories, but I'm also gonna say like no one can claim these movies are like you know very consistent. I'm just saying that. I mean, it's. Like, we've already seen Quicksilver. How old is he supposed to be? Okay, how old is he supposed to be in 1973? Is he supposed to be, like, 16? 14
to 16, yeah.
So how old is he in the present?
Well, they said that was 50 years, so he'd have to have been about 65.
And so that's why I'm just like, either there's some weird aging shit going on, or, blah, let's just move on.
Well keep in mind, we still got to deal with Havoc.
Well, speaking of Quicksilver, one thing I love is the look on Magneto's face when Quicksilver says, "Oh, my mom dated the guy who could do that."
Yeah, that was great. He's
like, the look on Magneto's face is, "Oh my god!"
It's like, "Oh shit!"
And they do show an unnamed sister to Quicksilver.
Yep, they do.
The baby sister.
If you look on their mother's face when Magneto's doing the tell,
yeah,
the look on her face is, "Oh god, I did this guy."
Yep.
Kids.
And I mean, to me, the fact that, I mean, I know it's a spoiler for anyone who hasn't actually heard this, the company that did X-Men, that owned the rights to X-Men, actually relented because two of the characters that are going to be in the next Avengers movie are Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch.
Yep.
Yes.
They're not mutants, but the brother and sister team will be in there. Well, and they didn't have to do that.
So they're not going to be mutants in the Avenger universe? Okay.
No.
They're going to be miracles.
I guess there's some rights issues, I guess.
It's the age of miracles.
Yep.
Fucking rights issues.
Yep.
But, like I said, I caught that look on Magneto's face is, oh my god, and the look on her face of, I did this guy.
Yeah,
but
I'd love
let's rewind a little bit, too, because, I mean, because like with Days of Future Past, the comic book, to me, the story really takes off at the beginning of the time travel. And unlike the comic where they have Kitty going back in time, Kitty's the catalyst that sends another X-Men back, Wolverine, because he's the only one that can physically withstand going that far back in time mentally.
Woo, Australia!
Because they originally were going to take Xavier back, but they said because Wolverine can actually heal from damage as it's happening, like Tom said, he's the only one who can take the trip.
Well, and quite frankly, I mean, when it comes down to it, if between Patrick Stewart's Charles Xavier or Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, I'm glad that they sent Hugh Jackman's Wolverine in the past, because I wouldn't want to see a Patrick Stewart gratuitous butt walk.
But what I loved about this is the very few scenes with the older Magneto and Xavier where they realize the world is fucked, and they realize, you know.
I love the old man holding hands. Oh, we should have been together the whole time. Oh!
I like that scene because it's
no,
it's saying,
I love it.
Because it's saying, you know, in the end, we both believe that mutants have a right to live, and we both believe in mutant rights, and we wasted all these years fighting over this
and not having
peddly
butt
little
sex.
Shit versus
right. It has shown that both characters had realized we were right and we were wrong, and because we couldn't reconcile, this is what's happened.
Yeah, the thing is, it's just little things like the fact that the older Magneto's not wearing his helmet, showing a complete trust in Charles.
Or the human helmet was destroyed.
Well, he can always make new helmets, but
yeah,
that's what I read into it.
Well, I'm sure that a lot of that was it. Because a lot of it was after First Class, where it was Magneto going off and leaving Charles Xavier after Xavier had just been shot in the spine, thanks to Magneto, to what we have 50 years in the future, where they've become, because they were always friends. We saw that in X-Men 1.
Yes.
At least
fancy a game of chess.
Yes. Well, in the beginning of X-Men 1, when the two of them bump into each other at Jean's symposium.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was best friends and worst enemies all wrapped up in one. We get more.
Malcolm
we got
X
more.
And it's just basically Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, you know?
Yeah.
We both want the same thing. We just got different ways of doing it.
Exactly.
You want to be friends with Whitey? I want to kill Whitey.
But we get to see. I mean, when he goes back, we get to see completely different characters in Charles Xavier and in Magneto than we have in any other film.
And the thing is, we see an Xavier who hits rock bottom and is basically slumming it in his own squalor because he tried to be the wise professor when he really wasn't mentally ready for it, and then the toll of losing most of his students and teachers to the Vietnam War was too much for him.
Well, that he lost his little sister, when he
raved. Yeah.
That I think that's really what broke him the most, is like, well, yeah, Vietnam sucked. Let's not, lie, but he lost his best friend since he was a kid.
Well, yeah. Zeke's loss was the first straw. But, I mean, this is someone who could read minds. And during the time of Vietnam, he not only had friends and students who went over and were killed, he had to feel willingly and unwillingly, especially when he used Cerebro, the mindset of America and the world at the time.
Yes.
I mean, all the hatred that was going on at that time, that would overwhelm anyone, even the strongest mind, if you got a good look into those minds. You had Xavier who, as you said, was rock bottom. He was literally taking a drug. It gave him his legs back, which was an interesting way of saying it, of doing it. And having McAvoy able to move around other than in a wheelchair, but it had the major effect of nullifying Xavier's mind reading powers.
Yes.
Who is Charles Xavier without Professor X?
Exactly. And one of the scenes I loved was when they rescued Magneto from the Pentagon. There was a scene on the plane when they're flying in a private plane, and the thing is, there's this whole "you left me, no, you left me" scene, and Magneto lists every mutant that died that they personally knew.
Well, and doing it while not so subtly threatening everybody on the plane, which is Charles and Logan, because he's slowly crushing the plane as well.
Yes, and he brings a very prominent point. He says, "We were supposed to protect them. We were the better of the generation. We were supposed to protect them."
Magneto is right.
Yeah, he was.
Magneto is always right.
Charles was just this, in his own squalor, trying to lock himself out of the mutant world,
I mean, that was only for a few years that Xavier was doing this, because he was a teacher. He was trying to do the right thing and trying to teach mutants to coexist with humans.
Yes.
I mean, because I don't care how you put it. That was one thing about the X-Men universe you just want to go and slap Chris Claremont about. Homo Superior is going to supplant Homo Sapiens. But the way that everybody treats it is like it's going to be tomorrow. That they're going to just snap their fingers, all of humanity is wiped out, and all that's left are the mutants. And that's not how it's going to work. But that's neither here nor there for this, other than the fact that I want to slap Claremont about that. I think, to me, one of the scenes that also... I enjoy James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender a lot more than Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart as the respective characters. They had a lot more meat to work with. In the X-Men films, Patrick Stewart has to be the wise Professor Xavier. Magneto has to be the sometimes subtle, sometimes not so subtle threat. You got a lot more complication with McAvoy and Fassbender's Xavier and Magneto.
Absolutely. And the thing is, I gotta say it, I like the 70 Sentinels.
Yeah.
Even the fact that they actually looked like robots.
I like the fact that they were able to use the chest plug design.
They actually mentioned the Harrier design.
If you looked really close, they looked really bad. Like the CG was pretty bad on them, and that's why they went. The reason they went for that design though is because they wanted to hide how bad the CG was. That's why they went for that extra glossy kind of look. Like they didn't want to show like, you know, these aren't up to. Because like when I saw that gun, when you see the machine type gun on it. Yeah, it looks really bad. It's like almost Wolverine claw level bad.
Well, speaking of claws,
the blue claws.
Yes.
Speaking of claws, that's one thing that's in this movie is we have the bone claws back.
Exactly, and they reference that as well, and I think was a great way by using flashbacks from X-Men 2.
Mm.
Yes.
And Wolverine. Wolverine Origins.
Well, that movie never happened now.
Yeah, it never happened. Oh, yeah. But the fact that they took it and they went with it. I mean, this existed. It won't in the future because it changed the past, but they accepted it and made it part of what it is, and it worked.
Yes. Well,
the Wolverine Origins movie never happened at all because Wolverine was supposed to be in Vietnam during that.
Well, they could be between tours.
Well, probably could be. Yeah.
I talked about McAvoy, Fassbender, Stuart McKellen performances. Hugh Jackman puts in a tour de force. I mean, I actually think that this was his best run as Wolverine.
Absolutely. I mean, the conversation he had with Magneto on the plane, where Magneto's like, I bet you're gonna say we're best buds in the future, aren't you? Wolverine just says, man, I spent the better part of my years trying to bring you down.
I actually think out of all of them, and as much as I've loved them, almost all the actors in this, I think that Jennifer Lawrence's Miss Raven and Mystique was I think top of the list has to be Peter Dinklage.
Yes.
I mean,
not enough.
Bolivar Trask in the comic books was a throwaway character. He was the creator of the Sentinels. He was the inventor of Master Mold, that was the sentient computer/robot that built the Sentinels.
The easy bake oven.
Yep.
Well, here,
you've got, especially with Peter Dinklage and his performances on Game of Thrones and performance here in Days of Future Past, you have got this great personality that you don't care. You don't even notice that he's a little person.
Exactly.
He is just, I mean, bam, right there. And everything else is just by the wayside. He's got such that force of personality. And I think that the way that he performed as Bolivar Trask in this movie, to the subtle things like, I mean, admitting that he admires mutants, but realizing that he can use this for his own agenda.
The common goal for all of humanity.
Exactly.
To fight their very extinction.
No matter, one of the things about the First Class movies, I mean, First Class and Days of Future Past, is X-Men, I'm sorry, they were stereotype characters. They were cookie-cutter characters. Here, each of the characters is a personality. It's a person. There is no absolute good, absolute evil. You see so many shades of gray and so many other colors, which shouldn't be in black and white, that are running through all the characters. Magneto is right. Magneto is wrong at the same time. Xavier is right. Xavier is wrong. Wolverine is right and wrong. You've got people.
One thing I got to mention is the actor for Young Beast has really, you know, come into. I mean, this is the best Beast makeup we've seen.
Nicholas Holt?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He plays the whole
Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, like just the transformation, not that there is that split personalities, was great. But anytime he wasn't in Beast mode was my where Beast I preferred mode? Him. Beast you know mode. What I mean. Well, what would you prefer me to say when he wasn't hulked out, you know?
But
whenever he wasn't, yes, when he wasn't in his blue period, was when I preferred Nicholas Holt's performances, because, you know, there's he did well enough with the makeup in the first movie, and he did pretty good here, but it's when he wasn't the Beast, that's when he shone for me in his performance.
Yeah.
Like, just that scene where he takes that look at Raven at before it all, before Magneto drops, like, the stadium around the White House. And he has, like, that look of, like, there's my girl, you know, just because he's still got it bad for Mystique.
Yeah. And it's ironic. I mean, I know this is... Spoiler alert, people! It's one of the things about that broke him and Mystique up in the first movie was that he wants to be normal. He wants to be at least fit in with everybody else. Mystique was, I mean, well, Raven was learning mutant and proud.
Yeah.
And I deserve to look like this. Screw everybody else.
Yes.
Yep.
And yet what saves Hank McCoy towards the end of the movie, I mean, after the thing that you see in the commercials where he asks Wolverine, do I make it in the future? Do I live in the future? No. What saves him here is the drug that he's been taking to help him balance between human and mutant. He overdoses himself on it, completely suppressing his mutant powers, so he shows up as human.
Yep.
Which is, I mean, that was Hank McCoy in a nutshell. He wanted to be human. Eventually, as we've seen, Kelsey Grammer, that he does accept it. That he stays in his blue-furred form all the time.
That's 7 seconds of the whole movie.
Yeah,
I mean, like, I really like that scene, like, when he comes back and he sees Beast, and Beast is just, you know, blue, he doesn't care anymore, he's like, he's gotten over it,
and
you know?
He's wearing quite a dapper, you know.
I know, I was like, ah, yay! And of course,
Yarders.
Yeah.
I was just waiting for someone to call him Professor Logan when he wakes up.
Yeah,
but
I do like when he wakes up.
The thing is, the original Days of Future Past comic was ambiguous to the success, but here we get to see no, it is a success. We have this awesome wake up sequence that plays to Wolverine's initial wake up sequence with that song.
Yeah,
yeah,
and you see him walking through the halls of the school and he sees Rogue with Bobby. Sees Kitty teaching a class with Colossus,
who hasn't been torn apart. Like that scene towards the end, just where he pops like so much silly putty. I literally like edge of my seat, welling up with emotion because it's like, oh, dude, no.
Set 357, make a wish.
The thing is, you know, a credit to Bryan Singer's talent with the film itself is the crescendo building up where you see the original Model 1 Sentinels rising up in the air in formation. At the same time, you see the future. You see the Nimrod Sentinels flying in. It's like, the thing is, your brain starts seeing the similarities in the models of Sentinels and you're realizing, if no matter future or past, if our team in either time has to fight them right now, they're fucked.
Well, see, I mean, I have to wonder how much of this was Bryan Singer and how much of it was Matthew Vaughn, who was one of the writers and the director of First Class, and he was supposed to be the director of this until Singer stepped back in.
Mm.
So, I mean, the script was already done, and we already had Matthew Vaughn's fingerprints all over it, which we can see there was a lot of the personality that came over from the first movie.
And also another thing is, finally, a Storm that I can stand.
Yeah.
She didn't talk much.
And her hair wasn't so completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Although I think Miss Barry, what we'd really like to do with this film is make you look like Storm in the comics. Oh, which version? And they show her the mohawk, and you just could feel her eyes narrow into slits and the claws pop out.
Howie,
that's what they're doing with the future Storm. They were going for like that faux hawk thing just to get that in there.
But it worked this time. And like I said, the fact that the future X-Men costumes aren't costumes, they aren't leather with X-pads anymore. It's body armor now. Even the fact, you know, Professor Xavier is wearing body armor.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's a sign that when the professor has to be a warrior, that means he's lost.
Well,
yep.
Now I have to talk about my favorite scene, and what everybody I've talked to says pretty much the same thing about this one scene. Back in first class, one of the strong things that I loved was the use of period music. I mean, when they go and they've got that great music playing as Xavier and Eric Clincher are searching for mutants, that just it worked beautifully with that music.
Yes.
Yeah, it did.
In Days of Future Past, and to me, what was best scene in the movie, you've got the late, great, and incomparable Jim Croce's Time in a Bottle.
Yes. As
Quicksilver takes over.
I love that scene. Because that's one of the best super speed scenes ever. He runs on the wall, he tastes the soup.
I mean, it's great. And like,
it's the smile that he had on his face the entire time.
Exactly. And things like flipping off the hat, I mean, moving the fists around and giving it just that super speed push so that they hit each other.
Pushing the bullets slightly out of the way.
Yeah, enough to where it'll get, it isn't saving them, but it's enough to make them shit their pants, excuse me. But that's what it was. It was, I'm going to save them, but I'm going to make them know that I saved them.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, it was the that was Quicksilver arrogance.
I loved it.
Beautiful. And it was was the best representation of a speedster that I've seen in any of the media.
Mm-hmm.
It was fabulous. I will never hear that song the same way again.
Well, I will, but I mean, I've heard it a lot more than y'all.
I love Jim Croce. I grew up on Jim Croce.
Yeah, but I was alive when he died.
Okay, point taken.
I still remember the Sonny and Cher show where they had a little memorial to him. So there.
Okay. But
yeah, I mean, you got everything there. I mean, this is really the only time in the character's entire existence that I liked Bishop.
I agree. Bishop came off as great. Bishop came off as this warrior that just wants to survive, and he's sort of stuck his lot with the X-Men, and because, you know, the way he just says, there's no way he can take that many on.
Yeah.
And Storm reaffirms herself as the field leader, saying, no, but we can slow them down.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like Bishop at all.
I like
he didn't
that,
have much to do.
He uses the Liefeld gun to channel his power.
Well, I mean,
which is how he was first introduced in the comic.
I won't even say it's a Liefeld gun, because it wasn't oversized. It was the size of a modern rifle, and granted, it had the power cords leading to Bishop, since he was the great energy converter battery, but it worked.
It wasn't shooting out of the bottom of the barrel, either.
Yeah, and he had feet and no pockets.
The thing is, I'm a 90s X-Men fan. I fucking loved Bishop as a kid.
Seeing him
explode when the Sentinels are all blasting him, that just killed my inner child, man. My inner child was yelling, he could take that! Well, he stopped the juggernaut!
That was kind of goes back to like Darwin swallowing the energy marble in the first movie a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, just visually been able to adapt.
Well, in the comics. So there is the possibility of some writer is fanboy enough to come up with a way to bring him back in a future film. We spoke about before, like Blink, like I know it was the makeup, but I really like the look of it was Bing Bing Fan, the actress that played Blink.
Yeah, no matter what, you've got to admit that they've got some of the greatest names of the actors. I mean, you've got Bing Bing Fan, you've got Boo Boo Stewart, you've got Mark Camacho as Nixon. I mean,
actually, without a very modest makeup job, honestly, because
I know
most time Hollywood does Nixon, they go way too fucking far with the cheeks and the nose.
Well, that's what everyone thinks Nixon looks like, though.
Yeah. Who's the guy who did his voice in Futurama? Should have got him to do Nixon.
Oh, I forgot who did his.
I'll break into their houses at night and wreck the place.
That was Maurice LaMarche, so.
Well, but no, I love like Blink, because, I mean, you go back to like the Phalanx Covenant, and so always a character. I thought the mutant power is really cool, and it was one of the best powers realized on film.
Yeah.
Like, she is a living portal gun. That's, there's no other way to say it, but I mean...
The Colossus jump.
Oh, yeah. Like, that's like, what do you call that, a 90-degree inversion to the fastball special?
Yep.
Yes. Torpedoes away.
Yeah. I was not disappointed with Blink at all.
I mean,
I used to read Exiles.
She was the last one to fall in the courtyard.
Yeah, she was pretty awesome.
Well, then she gets, like, the three-way stabbing like that. I will say, I've never been a huge fan of Halle Berry, so a very small part of me, when she got shanked like that, I was kind of like, yes.
You too? I was that way too. I was like, yay!
But inside, because you didn't want to piss everyone else off in the theater. The only mutant that I really didn't care for, like, okay, I've in recent years in the comics, they've made Warpath, like, this legitimate badass. So I was a little disappointed that you didn't really see him to kick that much ass in the film. The one that I really didn't care for, is he's almost superfluous, other than the fact that, you know, Bishop needed a charge, was Sunspot.
I love Sunspot, though.
Well, in the comics, he's great, but in the movie, he's there for, like, what, 3 or 4 scenes?
Yeah.
Not even 10 minutes of screen time, and he's basically there to A, charge Bishop, and B, get killed by the Nimrods.
And he's more also Sunfire than Sunspot.
Yeah, he's not the Human Torch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is to explain him as, oh, he has Superman-like powers from the same source of sun, except when he uses them, he looks like he's a sun, would not make sense to young people. So they're like, okay, Human Torch, whatever.
Well, and you had once a super strong guy in Colossus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, but technically, Warpath is supposed to be super strong, too, but...
Well, not he's strong, but not, I mean, not Colossus level, not...
And how have these films not been a godsend for Daniel Cudmore, like the guy that played Colossus? I mean, he goes from, like, what, not even 3 minutes of screen time to X2 to a, what, 15 minutes total in this movie. They just keep bringing him back in all these films.
Well, you know, same for everyone else. I mean, Ellen Page, who's become a terrific actress in her own right, but had, I mean, minimal roles in the previous X films, and here she's given something better.
They brought back even the guy who played Scott.
Sean Ashmore, who played Bobby Drake. I mean, minimal roles in the previous X films, but here he gets to kick ass.
Yes.
They got lucky in the fact that a lot of the people they cast in the previous movies had gone on and had phenomenal careers. They've proven themselves to be actors.
One of the things I loved about Iceman, too, was he finally got to use the ice slides.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which was awesome to see. Now, I can't remember the actor's name, but there was, and then just a quick aside, there was the guy who played Pyro in the first movie. In that great introduction scene to, like, him and Iceman.
Yes.
And then you get the new guy that played Pyro in 2 and 3. You gotta wonder if that first guy is just watching these movies, just in his mind, he's just screaming fuck over and over again.
Probably. But you know, we've been talking about how great this movie has been for about 45 minutes, so let's wrap this up with just saying... The whole panel recommends this movie for viewing.
Yeah. Don't try to think too hard. But
before we go, Ben, we should talk about how Fox is ripping off Marvel's end credit scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't see the end credit scene?
Yeah.
I saw in Sabanor, yes.
Which, one of the things it says, I probably will not see the next X-Men film.
The thing is, the only time the four Horsemen worked was X-Men Evolution. Drop the mic.
Well, see, I mean, no, the character, okay, folks, another
spoiler alert.
Yeah, at the end of the movie, so the post-credit scene, and everybody's doing it now, they have the introduction of the mutant that's going to be, everybody?
Apocalypse.
No.
The mutant that's always more powerful than everybody else to get put together, but is defeated by a Deus Ex Machina every time.
Big red button.
Yeah.
But they also started the beginning. They started the movie with Cable, and they ended it with Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Yeah, because from what I'm looking on the wiki here, X-Men Apocalypse, which should be out in like 2016, it's basically set in the 80s.
So we're going to have Mohawk Storm.
Possibly. So, you know, it's possibly we're going to have Apocalypse. And I don't know about you. I love the big blue armored version of Apocalypse. That's what I'm hoping for.
I want to see a guy dressed like a pharaoh.
That would be cool, too. And take it what you will, we're going to have Gambit in the next movie.
Yeah,
it's Channing Tatum.
Yes, Duke from G.I. Joe.
Who?
The stripper from Magic Mike.
It could. We'll see what happens. I'm abstaining from judging until I actually see, like, a trailer or something.
Yeah, I mean, with the right director, they could get a good performance out of any actor. Well, so much for that.
Well, okay. So I'll admit that I thought Heath Ledger would be a terrible Joker, so...
True, but I mean, I think that's the exception that fit the rule.
People actually wrote in to Warner Brothers complaining about the... what's his name is Batman? Back in
The people Michael Keaton.
Yeah, Michael Keaton, because he's a funny guy. He's gonna play Batman. He's a funny guy. He's a comedian. He's not Batman. People wrote in droves back in 1980s. Yeah.
Apparently, they've never seen any of Robin Williams' movie work.
But Tom will attest to that. Tom remembers back in the 80s, people wrote Warner Brothers saying, Michael Keaton? He's not Batman. He's
a
funny guy.
Look at this. How many people absolutely despised Hugh Jackman as the choice for Wolverine? He's too tall. He's Australian. He's not going to work. Yeah.
I saw him and I immediately went, that is Wolverine.
I'll admit, I was one of the ones saying, Wolverine's a short guy. That's supposed to be part of it. Hugh Jackman, I can't see anybody else as Wolverine other than him.
Mm-mm, no. Certainly. He is Wolverine. Yeah. I also love how cute he is about the role, too. It's like, talk, in Australia, it's all about it.
Because
I've read online, there's talk after Apocalypse and the third Wolverine movie, which apparently will be Hugh Jackman's exit, there's talk that they want to get the original choice for Wolverine in, that was Doug Ray Scott. Now, for those that are listening who don't recognize that name, he was the villain of Mission Impossible 2, who was like the evil Ethan Hunt in that film. He was the original choice for Wolverine with Bryan Singer's X-Men. He ended up having to bow out because he was in that Cinderella movie with Drew Barrymore.
Ever After.
That was out at the time, which...
He's 3 years older than Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, I mean, he's 48 years old right now. He's not going to be able to be Wolverine.
I don't think he's going to be able to do Wolverine. Because, like, the thing is that if they're trying to get someone who can go, with the role longer, going with someone older does not seem like the right choice.
Yeah, no, I think they're going to go with...
That's the rumor, so...
They may go mocap and just have it be Robo-Hugh.
Yeah. But anyways, let's wrap this up. Overall recommendations all around. This year's Ben...
JT from Saskatoon. Neil.
Oh, yeah, I'm back. TV special.
Kitty Hawk of Sparkling Generation Valkyrie Yuki. SGVY.com, your one-stop shop for sexy fun.
Boy, somebody who does more of a plug than I do. And that's from 910 Comics, 910CMX.com. I'm Thomas Revor, who was killed in the Mutant Wars of 2013.
And I didn't plug. CN.com. DASIN.com.
M-O-U-S-E.
Tapas Red!
And I'm Red Ink. I'm just here giggling in the background and listening to all these crazy guys.
And we are saying goodnight.
So long.
Farewell.
I have this feeling of deja vu.
Peace out.